This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
A ByteDance engineer in Beijing is secretly expensing a VPN to America. And meanwhile, deep in the Indonesian jungle, a bottleneck in raw nickel mining is quietly dictating the launch date of a massive AI server in Saudi Arabia. Welcome to today's deep dive.
Thanks for having me. You know, we so often picture the global AI race as this pristine, frictionless realm of like pure math just floating in a glowing cloud server.
Right, like it's all just clean code and magic.
Exactly. But the moment you look under the hood, that illusion completely shatters.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to explore exactly that, the messy physical trench warfare of the global AI race. We've got a fascinating stack of sources today, ranging from highly granular tech supply chain reports to some incredibly sharp commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Yeah, his insights really ground this whole discussion.
For sure. Because whether you're an investor, a tech developer, or just wildly curious, you have to realize that while everyone is distracted by the glamorous side of AI, the multi-billion dollar valuations and the sleek user interfaces, the actual balance of power is being decided by hidden surveillance codes, microscopic ceramic capacitors, and humanoid companion robots.
It is the ultimate collision between software ambitions and hard physical realities. And, you know, tracing those connections gives us a much clearer map of where the global economy is actually heading, way beyond the daily headlines.
Let's start at the software layer, specifically the cat and mouse game of AI access.
We
all know the broad strokes here, right? The U.S. implements export curbs, trying to wall off top-tier American AI models from Chinese firms.
Right, the digital wall.
But our sources detail the incredible lengths tech giants are going to enforce those walls, and the even wilder lengths users are going to bypass them. Like, take Anthropic and their Claude model, for example.
Mm. Yeah. Anthropic realized very quickly that you can't just put up a digital no-entry sign based on an IP address. I mean, an IP address is way too easy to spoof using virtual private networks or by routing traffic through offshore shell entities.
Anyone can just bounce their connection.
Exactly. So they embedded covert surveillance code deep into their platform to catch the workarounds. And one of the most fascinating tactics was monitoring time zones.
Wait, time zones? So their code was essentially checking if the local system time on a user's machine matched the geographic location of the IP address they were connecting from.
That's it. So if the IP says you're in San Francisco, but your system clock is set to Beijing time, that's a massive red flag.
Oh, wow. That's actually brilliant.
It is. And the sheer scale of the evasion they uncovered using this method is staggering. According to a letter Anthropic sent to a U.S. senator, Alibaba's Kun AI lab alone had roughly 25,000 fake accounts.
25,000.
Yeah. And in just over a month, those accounts generated 28.8 million interactions.
That is wild. I mean, our sources say ByteDance engineers were buying personal Claude subscriptions via VPNs and literally expensing them back to the company. And yet Ant Group operating corporate accounts through a Singapore entity. It's like trying to patch a leaky dam with duct tape. Eventually, the water just finds another way around, or they just decide to build their own reservoir.
That's a great way to put it. Anthropic's time zone surveillance was checking the ID, but the users were simply wrapping their requests in offshore IP addresses. And ultimately, that surveillance code backfired.
Right, because users don't like being spied on.
Exactly. Regular users eventually figured out their hardware metrics were being monitored, which triggered a massive backlash over data privacy. Anthropic actually had to roll back some of this code. It really highlights a severe limitation. American AI companies cannot effectively act as private enforcement arms for government export regulations without, you know, compromising their own user trust.
Which brings us to a brilliant point raised by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. When you look at this whole endeavor, the ultimate lesson is that blocking access doesn't stop development. It functions as a massive forcing function.
Right. It accelerates the alternatives.
Exactly. Because of these roadblocks, Chinese firms haven't just been using workarounds. They've been rapidly advancing their own models in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing models like Zhipu AI's GLM 5.2 and Longcat 2.0 catching up at a breakneck pace.
And forcing them to build their own alternatives didn't just keep them contained to software either. The moment these firms built their own highly capable AI models, their own reservoirs of compute, like you said, the nature of the global export market fundamentally changed.
Let's follow that thread.
Yeah.
Because if they are no longer relying on American APIs, they are suddenly free to export their own tech. But deploying these alternatives globally isn't just about selling cloud access anymore.
No, it's entirely physical now.
Right. A company like Zhipu AI, is actively launching massive, physical, large model infrastructure projects in places like Singapore, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia. But, I mean, taking on the logistical nightmare of deploying physical servers in the desert feels incredibly inefficient. The only reason they would do that is if those countries are flat-out refusing to let their data cross borders.
That is the exact mechanism driving this pivot. We are officially entering the era of strict data sovereignty. Nations in the Middle East and Southeast Asia are increasingly mandating that their citizens' data and, you know, crucial corporate data must remain physically within their own borders.
Which makes sense from a security standpoint.
It does. But now, U.S. companies like OpenAI and Anthropic are often locked out of fully serving these markets natively simply because U.S. export curbs prevent them from shipping the high-end chips required to run those servers locally.
So a massive regulatory void opens up, and Chinese infrastructure steps right in to fill it.
Exactly. And they are filling it with increasingly sophisticated technology. Like, ByteDance is currently running a corporate beta for CDance 2.5, which generates 30-second 4K video seamlessly in a single shot. Although the U.S. launch is delayed due to copyright issues.
Of course.
And then there's DeepSeek V4 launching mid-July. They are rolling out a new framework co-developed with Peking University called DSpark, which our sources note boosts single-user speed by 60 to 85%.
That's a huge jump.
It is, but it also increases overall system throughput by a massive 661%.
Wait, a 661% increase in throughput? That means they fundamentally changed how the data is routed and processed. It sounds like they're using like a hyper-efficient parallel processing structure to chop up the data request, minimizing any latency.
Precisely. And the kicker is that this DSpark framework is open source. It can run on other models like Gemma and Qwen.
So it's all about maximizing efficiency at a foundational level. If you can squeeze 600% more throughput out of your software framework, you can mitigate some of the hardware limitations imposed by sanctions. So what does this all mean for you listening right now? If you work for a Korean AI firm trying to expand into the Middle East or Southeast Asia, this changes your entire competitive landscape. You aren't just looking over your shoulder for American tech giants anymore.
No, not at all.
You are going to be going head to head with deeply entrenched Chinese infrastructure that is already physically wired into the ground in those countries.
And deploying all this localized infrastructure naturally requires an ocean of physical hardware. But if you ask anyone what the bottleneck is for building a new data center, they will almost always point to the same two things, GPUs and HBMs.
Which makes total sense. I mean, the graphical processing units are the brains doing the heavy math, and the HBMs, the high bandwidth memory chips, are essential because they stack memory vertically, allowing the GPU to pull massive amounts of data at lightning speed without bottlenecking. But former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim points to something completely different.
Something almost invisible.
Right. MLCCs.
Yes, the multi-layer ceramic capacitor. To understand why this is a choke point, we really have to look at what it actually does. An MLCC is a microscopic component that acts as a tiny energy reservoir. It regulates the flow of electrical current in a circuit, absorbing excess voltage and releasing it when there's a dip.
So it's basically a microscopic power regulator.
Yeah. A standard smartphone might have 1,000 of them just to keep the battery power flowing smoothly to the processor.
Yeah.
But an AI server, packed with those power-hungry GPUs and HBMs we just mentioned, requires thousands upon thousands of highly specialized, high-capacity MLCCs.
Okay, so what happens if you don't have enough of them?
Well, if you cannot perfectly regulate the massive electrical current flowing into a high-end GPU, you will literally fry the system.
Wait, so you're telling me that without this speck of ceramic, your $100,000 server rack is effectively a very hot paperweight?
A very expensive, very hot paperweight, yes. And right now, the supply chain for high-capacity MLCCs is buckling under the pressure. Prices for AI server MLCCs have surged 50 to 60% over just 4 months.
Wow.
In Shenzhen's Huaconbai electronics market, brokers are reportedly updating their price quotes every 30 minutes. They're treating these components like volatile stocks.
That's insane.
The Japanese manufacturer Murata has already hiked prices 3 times this year, anywhere from 10 to 40%.
But it's not just a demand issue, is it? The sources mentioned an unexpected collision with a geopolitical mining policy in Indonesia.
Right. This is where the supply chain gets incredibly fragile. Indonesia recently cut its nickel ore exports by roughly 2/3. And nickel powder is the critical raw material used to create the inner electrodes of these high-capacity capacitors.
So an explosion in global AI server demand slams directly into a sudden politically driven drought in raw nickel.
Exactly. Industry trackers like TrendForce are projecting this specific shortage won't ease up until the first half of 2027.
Which is a fascinating double-edged sword. I mean, for Korean manufacturers like Samsung Electromechanics, this is a massive opportunity to improve profitability. But if you are an architect trying to budget and schedule the construction of a new multi-billion-dollar data center, this invisible component is now a catastrophic, unpredictable variable in your timeline.
And the hardware constraints stretch all the way down the line. We see it acutely in China's domestic chip production. The government is backing SMIC and Huahong Semiconductor with a massive $47.5 billion investment vehicle known as Big Fund Third.
$47 billion.
Yeah. Their stated goal is to quintuple their 7-nanometer and 5-nanometer production capacity within 2 years, jumping from less than 20,000 advanced wafers a month to 100,000.
But they are doing this with one hand tied behind their back. Because of sanctions, they are banned from buying the latest EUV Extreme ultraviolet lithography machines. And EUV uses incredibly short wavelengths of light to carve microscopic circuits into silicon with absolute precision. So instead, CES is forcing older DUV deep ultraviolet equipment to do the job. That's like trying to paint a microscopic masterpiece with a thick house painting brush.
It's incredibly inefficient. It requires complex, multi-patterning techniques that are highly prone to error. We see this with SESMIC's N plus 3 node, which is the 5-nanometer equivalent used to power processors like the Kirin 9030. Because they are using older DUV tools, the yield rate is sitting at a dismal 20 to 40%.
Meaning for every 100 chips they manufacture, they are literally throwing away 60 to 80 of them because they're defective.
Exactly.
Absorbing an 80% defect rate requires an oceanic amount of capital. It proves that achieving technological independence isn't a pure engineering problem anymore. It's a test of sheer financial endurance.
Absolutely. And nobody feels that financial pressure and the weight of these alliances more acutely right now than South Korea. Securing this hardware supply chain instantly turns corporate strategy into high-stakes geopolitics.
Let's look at the numbers here because they are staggering. South Korea is pouring roughly 800 trillion won, which translates to about $518 billion into domestic semiconductor and AI investments.
Right.
And the vast majority of this flows through just two entities, Samsung and SK Hynix.
Which creates a terrifying level of structural concentration risk for the entire nation's economy. The KOSPI index is South Korea's equivalent to the S&P 500, tracking all their major publicly traded companies. Right now, Samsung and SK Hynix make up nearly 50% of the entire KOSPI index.
Just two companies.
Just two. And we just saw a brutal demonstration of what happens when that balance tips. Recently, a sudden dip in sentiment caused Samsung shares to drop 9.1% and SK Hynix to plunge 15%.
Because they hold so much weight, that dragged the entire KOSPI index down 8% in a single market crash. Roughly $290 billion in market cap was temporarily erased, though we've seen it rebound, driven by underlying AI chip demand.
It's wild. Half of a national stock exchange tethered to the volatility of the global AI hardware boom. But, you know, the financial risk is only half the story. Lawyer Kun Jin Kim provides some excellent commentary on the geopolitical tightrope South Korea is currently walking. The country is part of the U.S.-led PEC-Silica Alliance.
Right, which is an initiative explicitly designed to secure semiconductor supply chains among democratic allies and isolate China's technological advancement.
Yes. Yet despite being a core member of that alliance, South Korea's semiconductor exports to China recently surged by an astonishing 243%.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
How does a country balance being in a U.S.-led alliance while its biggest export market is the very country that alliance is targeting?
It is a fundamental clash of national interests. Former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim really nails this. The United States enacted the CHPS Act, offering massive subsidies. But the overarching goal is to pressure allied companies to build their fabrication plants on American soil. The U.S. wants the physical supply chain within its own borders for national security.
But South Korea isn't just going to hollow out its own manufacturing base to please the U.S. They're using a chunk of that 800 trillion won to build four new massive domestic fabs in their own southwest region.
Right. The strategy of the U.S. wanting the factories and Korea wanting the factories cannot run parallel forever. Adding to the tension, U.S. think tanks are publicly pointing out gaps in Korea's compliance with export controls to China. This forces the Korean chip industry into what lawyer King Jin Kim calls the politics of investment allocation.
So South Korea leadership has to constantly, delicately weigh how much capital they invest at home to maintain leverage, how much they concede to U.S. pressure by building in places like Texas, and how they avoid alienating their most lucrative export market across the LSE.
It is an utterly exhausting balancing act.
It really is. But it begs the ultimate question, what is all this for? The $518 billion investments, the fight over microscopic MLCC capacitors, the physical servers in the desert. Where is all this infrastructure actually leading us?
Well, it is leading directly to the embodied AI era.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
We are rapidly transitioning from interacting with AI through a screen or a chat window to AI moving autonomously through our physical spaces. Our sources highlight a massive initiative from China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIT. They're planning to roll out 50,000 industrial 5G private networks by the year 2030.
A private 5G network is crucial here. It's not about downloading a file faster on your phone. It's about ultra-low latency. When you have automated factory floors, edge AI agents, and autonomous robots operating in close proximity, they need to communicate and process sensor data in real time, down to the millisecond. That 5G grid is essentially the nervous system for a fully automated industrial base.
Exactly. And the physical bodies for that nervous system are already in production. Morgan Stanley is projecting 50,000 humanoid robots will be deployed in China by 2026.
Wait, if they're deploying 50,000 humanoid robots and each one of those walking chassis requires massive onboard compute to process that real-time data, that is going to put an even more devastating strain on those MLCC and high-bandwidth memory shortages we just talked about.
Every advancement compounds the supply chain pressure. The bodies for this nervous system are arriving faster than our manufacturing base can supply the parts. But the demand isn't just industrial. One of the most fascinating case studies in our sources is actually a consumer product, the Ubitech U1 companion robot.
Oh, this thing. This robot already has 13,361 pre-orders. And the top-end model costs up to 990,000 RMB, which is incredibly expensive, roughly in the ballpark of a high-end luxury car.
Yeah, it's not a toy.
No. It has 88 degrees of freedom, meaning its joints and movements are designed to mimic human biomechanics almost flawlessly. But the hardware isn't the most shocking part. It is heavily integrated with emotional AI.
Right. The U1 uses a combination of facial microexpression analysis, vocal tone processing, and biometric sensors to recognize and respond to 20 different human emotional states.
In its primary target market, the 120 million single households in China and the country's 320 million elderly people. They are quite literally engineering a technological solution to the loneliness epidemic.
It is a profound shift. I mean, we are looking at machines designed specifically to form synthetic emotional bonds with humans who are isolated.
But here is the ultimate twist in this narrative. If you're a developer, say, building elder care robots in Korea, you have to watch this. The tech industry pushed the absolute boundaries of emotional AI to capture this loneliness economy, and then they slammed face first into a regulatory wall.
Yeah, the timing on this is wild.
On July 15th, just days from the report we were looking at, China's AI anthropomorphism service management methods takes effect.
This regulation heavily restricts what the government calls continuous emotional interaction with AI. The state is stepping in because they are wary of the psychological impact of citizens forming deep, potentially manipulative or, you know, overly dependent attachments to proprietary algorithms.
So companies are actively panicking. Major AI services like Tongyi Kwanwen are frantically deleting user data related to emotional bonding just to comply before the deadline hits. Tech companies engineered these systems to be flawlessly empathetic. The government essentially turned around and made that level of empathy illegal. Are we looking at incredible technological progress, or are we engineering a threat to authentic human relationships?
It's the ultimate irony. They built the perfect synthetic companion only to slam into regulations that force them to neuter the very emotional connections they just invented. It is a stark reminder that in the global AI race, the final choke points aren't always technological or supply driven. Often the hardest barriers to cross are human, regulatory, and psychological.
Let's trace the path we just took on this deep dive because it perfectly illustrates how interconnected this all is. We started by looking at Anthropic's time zone surveillance codes, discovering how the attempt to block access only forced Chinese developers to rapidly build their own AI reservoirs.
Right.
We saw how those new models are now physically exporting data sovereignty to the Middle East, requiring mountains of new infrastructure. We zoomed in to find that the entire timeline for those multi-billion dollar data centers hinges on microscopic MLCCs and Indonesian nickel policies.
Which is still just crazy to think about.
It really is. Then we zoomed out to watch South Korea walk a $518 billion geopolitical tightrope trying to build factories without alienating the U.S. or China. And finally, we saw all that compute power culminate in humanoid companion robots, only for them to be regulated out of having the very emotions they were built to simulate.
Every single workaround in this ecosystem creates a brand new choke point. It is an endlessly shifting landscape.
And that leaves us with a final thought for you to mull over. We spend so much of our time analyzing the race for raw compute power, chip yields, and geopolitical leverage. But if a humanoid AI companion can flawlessly simulate 20 different human emotions using micro-expressions and vocal tremors to the point where an elderly person in complete isolation feels truly seen and truly loved, does it even matter to the human brain that it's just code? What happens to the fabric of our society when the most reliable, patient, and empathetic relationship you have requires a software update?
That might be the most important question we have to answer in the next decade.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Remember, the engine room is always messier than the interface. Keep questioning the information around you, and we'll see you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.